Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and joining me is longtime friend of the Big Three, Jessica Baker. Welcome, Jessica Baker.
Thank you, Matt. So good to be here. Good to be out of my little hidey hole for the moment.
You know, it's been a time. Things have changed since our last time in the Big Three studio. Life in lockdown. How's it treating you?
Look, it's actually pretty good.
Oh, you're one of those people. I hate those people. Go on, tell me how great lockdown is, Jess.
It's just no different. I was locked down with a newborn dog
anyway. You were recluse anyway.
And now I'm locked down with a newborn dog and my husband is working from home. So actually I have more freedom than I had before. Like if I want to go to the bedroom and just sit, I can. If I want to have a shower, I can. It's great. I'm loving it. If I want to come to the Big Three, I can.
You can. Yeah. Oh, gosh. The freedom that comes from
such
being
freedom.
Forced
such
into
freedom.
Your home.
But otherwise, I mean, not ideal. It's my husband's birthday coming up. We're just going to be spending the night at home. Mm. Fun times.
Yep.
And we had a little weekend away cancelled, but that's okay. You win some, you lose some.
Yeah, it's true. We had, you know, actually it was my wife's birthday last night, Samantha's, and we did have a little lockdown birthday celebration, just her and I on the couch with some Thai takeout. What a time.
Also, that's my favourite kind of birthday.
Oh, my gosh. I love a little duck basil.
Yeah.
Duck basil. We went bougie. But we had to, like, I've got to admit, the hard thing was explaining the cancellation of plans to our kids. So like Harper's in school holidays and we'd kind of promised the aquarium and time zone and all these things and he's just
shattered.
But also I think a bit of him thinks that we're making it up and
Mum just doesn't want to take
these guys just promised me something and they're not following through. It's like, no mate, seriously, like Gladys has told us like we've got to stay inside.
But also that's a great thing for parents to use from now on. Oh son, the COVID-19's back and it's lockdown today.
Isn't it a great thing for parents to use deceit and manipulation?
Parents have been using that for thousands
so
of
true.
Years.
So true.
It's nothing new.
It's a flashback to my childhood.
Triggered.
Oh, wow. So lockdown. Just
something we've learned.
Just something that we've learned. Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. Well, in a moment, we're going to be joined by Mark Rader, who preached during our online services this past Sunday. Jessa and I will be putting the big three questions to him as we dive deeper into the invitation from this week's sermon. Now, for those of you who missed it, Mark returned to a series that we launched back in April called On This Rock, Personal Reflections from Foundational Texts. And you can listen to that message again through our regular GBC Sermons podcast. But for now, Jess, I'm interested on your thoughts coming out of Mark's message on Sunday.
Well, Mark's message was very appropriate for me to be hearing at the time. Because I was going to be preaching this Sunday.
You were indeed.
And, you know, he was going through Jeremiah and the God was kind of like, shut up, I don't care about your excuses. Get out there and do my work. And I was sitting there going, I can't preach. I've got zero skills. And I feel like he was talking directly to me. But now that I'm no longer preaching.
Things have changed.
Coming from the podcast community.
It's not that was cancelled. It was just postponed, like so many things in lockdown. Just postponed. Yeah. You will have your time.
I'm trying not to read into it because last year I was supposed to preach and the world locked down. And this year, again, the world is locked down.
Oh, wow.
I think God has created COVID just to send me a message.
I just don't think that. No, I think that's not a helpful train of thought at all.
But ultimately, yeah, I thought it was really good. And that's something we need to remind ourselves. It's got nothing to do with our skills. It's everything to do with God.
It was a pretty, like, it was a full on, like, it was a bit brutal, wasn't it? What was it? Don't care, didn't ask, was the punchline from God in his little, you know, conversation, his little chat with Jeremiah.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like, you know, like I'm in a sensitive space right now. It's just a little bit confronting. I was like, oh, gosh, where's the love? Like, just hold me tight. Like, that's all I need. Just rock me back and forth. But, no, it was an important word and I think an important challenge. So I'm keen to kind of delve into it more. I think it's time for us to start looking at the three big questions submitted through Slido this week. So, Jess, what are our big three for today?
Question one, if Jeremiah were called in our context, what would be the threats facing him?
Boom.
All right. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, very good.
Love that.
Question two, how do we remain faithful in the midst of our legitimate concerns?
That was the hard part, right? Because Raider's there and he's like, oh, yeah, like your concerns, valid. Yeah,
Jeremiah sucked.
They're real.
But don't care.
Yep. I see them. I see it. But, yeah, still don't care. Didn't ask.
Yeah. Would like to know what that next step looks like. And question three, what can we do as a community to foster an environment that affirms and releases people into God's call?
Yeah, boom. Mm,
to say, don't care, off you pop.
Yeah. How do we also say, don't care, didn't ask, but maybe in a more warm, fuzzy way? Because if you're someone like me, I just can't kind of handle that brutal honesty.
No.
Right on. Keen for it. Well, I think there's only one thing missing, and that is the man himself, Reverend Dr. Mark Raider. Welcome to the Big Three.
Ray Dogs.
Wow. Good. The extremes of the formal and the informal.
Yeah. Bring it down.
Yeah. It's the tall poppy syndrome
there.
It's
a balance we need to have in the podcast Australia. Room. Yeah.
Speaking of don't know, didn't ask, don't care, whatever the case is.
How are you, Reid? It's been quite a week.
It has been a week. It's amazing how much has changed in just the week. Yeah. So, you know, back into lockdown, obviously, and so that's interesting.
Yep.
You know, I think the thing I've said to a few people, the thing that I find hardest about it is, our kids are older, so like lockdown isn't that big a deal kind of in terms of our day-to-day activities. Mm. But the thing that drives me nuts is making decisions only to have things change like 36 hours later. Yeah. You're like, oh, okay. So all last week, I mean, I think we made plans four times.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, there's a bunch of cases and so we're not going to be able to sing, okay, let's make some changes then. Mm. And then it escalated pretty quickly. And so it's like Saturday afternoon and we're making a new set of plans. I'm like, why didn't we just wait until Saturday afternoon and make one set of plans to rule them all.
COVID's just teaching you to roll with the punches. That's it. Just be loosey-goosey, whatever.
Yeah, so
I'm kind of waiting to see what the next thing is that's going to render all the plans that we made yesterday completely irrelevant.
And that's exciting. So.
Is it, though? Is it?
I mean, I'm not running a church. It's exciting for me, just sitting on my couch.
What's it
going
to look like?
That's right. Oh, I'd hate to be a school principal.
They're on holidays.
Yeah, they're loving life.
School holidays, but you've got this whole kind of... If everything goes to plan, then they'll just be able to roll back into school as per normal. And if it doesn't, they can't, you know. And so just that whole kind of uncertainty of not knowing whether it's going to be fine.
Yes.
I think that's less stressful for the principal and more stressful for the parents who have impending doom approaching them of
I did
back
not
to school
handle-
at home. Homeschooling
that well.
No. Yeah, I think I've heard, like, I've already heard, like, both parents of young children
and
teachers who didn't enjoy the online teaching experience, often because the kids were little as well. Mm. I think on both sides are just kind of like, just hope we don't go back to that.
Yeah.
So,
if we do get to that place, I'll just, you know, become comfortable with having an uneducated child.
Yeah. Who needs to read
and
write?
Get better skills. Like, we'll figure something else out for him.
Drama.
Yeah.
We'll just put on skits throughout the day. That would be my mum for sure.
Bless.
What a time. That would have been so good.
Anyway, moving on. I think it's time to get into the big three before we go into the deep dive of lockdown.
Yeah, let's not think about it too much.
Let's get into the big three. Well, Raider, we spent Sunday in a foundational text for you in Jeremiah, that opening section of the book of Jeremiah where he gets called by God, and they have, you know, they have a little chat about whether or not Jeremiah is a keen bean or not. But you spoke about context and how Jeremiah is one of those prophets that spells out the context of kind of where he's at and what it looks like. And, you know, it was a tumultuous time. It was really political, and really all eyes were on Jeremiah because he was so close to the king. Like, there was legitimate concern around, ultimately, if he put a foot the wrong way, like, that's it. See you later, Jeremiah. You'll be meeting the Lord a little bit sooner than you planned. So I'm interested because obviously that's really specific. We can't really relate to that. But if Jeremiah were called during our context, what would the threat be facing him?
In terms of the context, I mean, that, I don't know. Next question.
Wow. Sure. Okay. Okay. So,
we've stopped
it's a big
him.
Two.
It finally happened.
life goal achieved. So I think one of the challenges, I mean, as I mentioned in the message very briefly, the context of like what a prophet did in the ancient world and what, and like we don't really have a parallel in terms of a religious situation. So prophets did function, as I said, a little bit like, you know, front bench portfolio carrying members of parliament, right? They were the ones who were most involved in those really significant decisions and all of that. So I suppose if you were to say that if the parallel was to be a prophet in a political context, right, obviously the role of prophet has kind of faded away, you know, so whatever else the prime minister, whoever else the prime minister has in his cabinet, he doesn't tend to have, you know, in the Department of Prophecy.
Ooh, that'd be a cool job though.
Might be.
From Harry Potter.
Department of Mysteries.
Yeah. Sign me up.
So I think that if we take Jeremiah's contemporary role as being involved in government, in being involved in lobbying, in being involved in that kind of component, I think that the great challenges would be some of the same challenges that we face in terms of trying to enact godly change in our society.
Yeah.
So both, I guess, the danger of compromise, you know, because a lot of politics now, because we're in a democracy, is about compromise.
Give and take.
A little bit of give and take.
You
and
scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
That's right. We'll get a little bit of this legislation through, but I'll pull back a little bit on this or whatever the case might be. So I think compromise might be one of them. I think that, and I suppose this would have been true. Well, no, it was true for the prophets. I mean, one of the things that you find in the indictments of the prophets that's found throughout Scripture is their tendency to desire power and influence and wealth more than faithfulness to the Lord. And I think if anyone were in a position of power today, those things are still true. Influence, wealth, the power that comes with that often are really held on to. And so anything that would put you on seemingly on the wrong side of history, right?
Yeah.
You know, like politicians are kind of infamous for kind of changing their colors according to the political winds, right? So the whole idea of, you know, politicians who kind of hold to one set of principles regardless is becoming less and less common because political lives depend on being able to read the winds, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things that Jeremiah's ministry makes quite clear is Jeremiah was on the right side of history, but for the majority of his ministry, he was considered to be on the wrong side. So when the Babylonians were surrounding Jerusalem, he was in prison because as far as everyone else was concerned, his message of we just need to surrender to the Babylonians that we might actually survive this thing was seen as treasonous. You know, he almost died in prison. Like it was the whole kind of like it was full on. And yet it was, he was ultimately vindicated, but it took 40 years.
Heavy days.
You know, before his message of this is what's going to be happening kind of came to be perceived as, oh, yeah, you were right.
the guy talking directly to God is onto something.
Yeah, that's right. So I think that those challenges would still exist today. You know, I think if any of us were called to and placed in a position by God to sway the powers that be, there is influence, power, wealth, privilege, that comes with that I think can be really tempting, you know, and once there's, you know, you can see why the prophets were tempted to be less faithful and more, I guess more in line with the king's wishes because, it led to favor. It led to more opportunities. It led to on and on it went. And so I think that those would be the major temptations that would still face any prophet. And that would be true. You know, I suppose if you think about how the prophetic ministry is shaped now, it's less about being in the public eye and often more about speaking to the church. But even those who have kind of a prophetic ministry in that sense, who kind of hold up before the church what's taking place, that can still carry with it a certain degree of influence and, and power, spiritual power in particular, which can be quite tempting as well. So I think that would seem to me to be the places where the threats would exist, even though there's not really a clear parallel for the role that he would have.
I'm interested because, like, as you were kind of talking about facilitating societal change from the perspective of like what God is calling us into, and how, you know, in the political sense, there's a compromise, this give and take. How do we, you know, as we seek to, in our own context, see change in our world and participate in the change that God is doing in the world, what place does compromise have in that work? Because, you know, in many ways it's like, well, the word of God is the word of God. There's no if, buts or maybes.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is no compromise, I think a lot of people would say.
Yeah.
Is there? Is there not? Does it depend?
I think, yeah. Does it depend? Of course it depends. I mean, I suspect, well, I would say that I think that it depends on whether the compromise is final or partial. So
please explain.
Yeah, please explain. So I've been fairly influenced by a particular thought by H. Richard Niebuhr, which is that God is always at work in the world. And that part of the church's role is to be a pioneering community, listening to what God is doing and then responding. And one of the examples that he gives of the transformation that comes when that takes place is the abolitionist movement. Right. So, you know, I think that we would all look back on the fact that for, you know, a couple hundred years or whatever, England in particular had slaves. And we're just kind of like we're a Christian nation.
Yeah.
Like, what in the world? And regardless of kind of the whys of its development, there came a time fairly early in the piece when people were like, you know what, this is not right.
Yeah.
It's just not right. And I can't remember all of the dates of the various pieces of legislation, but there was a series of pieces of legislation that took place over, I want to say 20 or 30 years, that slowly but surely brought the abolishment of the slave trade about.
Yeah.
But the first one didn't abolish it. I think if I remember correctly, it was something like it was something really quite simple about what you couldn't do, and that had ripple effects in terms of the slave trade, but it wasn't the abolishment of the slave trade. And so while people like William Wilberforce and other members of parliament and people who were influential in British society were seeking to bring about the abolition of slavery, it actually took a series of what on one level looks like compromises or partial steps towards the final fulfillment. I think one of the things that we have to grapple with is how quickly you can move a society.
Yeah.
You know, I think the radical voices.
Not that
quickly. No. You know, and so the radical voices of this is what we need to do. We might very well agree with the principle. We might very much agree with the outcome. But there's just the reality that it's going to take some time, and there may be some compromises that need to be made along the way in order to get to that final goal. So again, I don't know if that's kind of breaking the journey down into various steps or whether it's a compromise. Like, I don't know whether, say, Wilberforce felt that the first piece of legislation was a compromise or whether he just saw it as the first step moving forward. But I think that's part of what I think we have to grapple with. And I think the temptation is to get a bit of a win and go, okay, that's enough. Like, I'm tired, or that was a lot of, you know, that was an enormous amount of work, or that's enough, or maybe it's not going to get any better, and to be satisfied rather than continuing to hold the vision of a fully restored and renewed community.
Yeah. So in the sense of rather than seeking out the final fulfillment of what God is doing in our world, kind of getting somewhere, that partial compromise and just being like, okay, we'll just leave it there and be content with that.
Yeah, it's kind of the difference between, I suppose, revolution and reformation, right? The whole idea of, like, the revolution says we're fixing it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my jam. I'm not into the long game.
Which often means we're just going to burn it down and, you know, and
that's not my jam. I'm not an arsonist.
Whereas the reformation process can be a slower,
arduous,
deeper,
so would say.
Arduous. Nice use of
thank you
terminology. So I think that those are some of the things that we grapple with.
Yeah,
it would be my thought.
Because I guess like the tension there is like we want to see the fulfillment of God's work in our world, but if we're content with just that partial compromise, then we're actually we're in a way kind of, we're adopting or I can't find the word, but we're kind of saying, hey, like, as long as we meet here, as long as this can kind of, this part of God and this part of society can interact in a fruitful way, then we'll kind of ignore the rest.
Yeah, well, and that's why I think that's what I was trying to get at with the whole a final compromise or a partial, like a step towards. And I think one of the challenges that people who are trying to bring reform often run into is that as far as the radicals are concerned, they're moving too slowly. Mm. And as far as, you know, those who are quite conservative, they're moving way too quickly. Mm. And so what's the pace of change? Which, and to some degree, I think it comes into the whole, you know, the change management stuff, right? You know, about what's the vision of the future and is there enough dissatisfaction with the current, you know, so the abolitionist movement didn't really gain ground until there was enough dissatisfaction in the society for people to kind of go, yeah, there's enough of us who are pretty cranky about this. So you think about the changes even in the attitudes towards climate change.
Yeah.
Over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
There's a lot more openness now at a grassroots level for change.
Mm. Jessica Baker.
Yeah. As we live and breathe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Still like meat.
My basil duck last night was delicious. Oh, gosh,
it was so succulent. My days. Take
carry
me back.
On.
So I think that, you know, that's a good example of where, you know, like climate change activists would say that we're moving way too slowly. Mm. And they may be right.
Yeah.
And there are still some voices that are saying, "No, this is too quick. This we can't do anything about this," or whatever the case might be. But there's a growing groundswell of people saying, "No, we need to do something, and we need to do something sooner rather than later." And that's going to bring about change, which again kind of drifts away from kind of the questions around compromise and how hard line you can be on things. You have to come back to Jeremiah. I mean, Jeremiah was not the one who made the decisions. Right. So all he could really do, all he could do was basically say, this is what the Lord says. You know, and there's, you know, speaking of the context, which you kind of, you mentioned at the outset, there's this fascinating interaction. I can't remember the chapter between Hananiah, who's a false prophet, and Jeremiah. And they're all in the presence of the, I think they're in the presence of the king or possibly in the temple. And Hananiah basically just says, this is the word of the Lord. And he prophesies that the people who have been taken captive into Babylon would be returned within 2 years, and the power of the Babylonian king would be broken. And Jeremiah's response is, amen. I hope that happens. But in reality, they're not coming home. You're a false prophet, and you're going to die inside of a year.
Heavy.
But and while that's heavy, because then he does die within the year. So it's
because
like,
he's a hot false prophet, or Jeremiah's just like,
I've had it with you. You're done. Yeah, no, I think it's more the kind of the judgment on his actions. But it just reminds you about the fact that the king, for instance, is listening to both voices. He hears both Hananiah saying what he probably wants to hear.
Yeah.
Which is Babylon's gonna be done, the exiles are coming home. It's all going to be good. There's a happy ending. And then Jeremiah saying, no, that's not taking place. And how the question about how the king made those decisions, I think is one of those unexplored aspects. You know, you got two people both saying, I'm a prophet of the Lord. This is what the Lord says.
Oof, I don't envy the king.
That's I think that's a fourth question.
Well, you know, and I don't envy Jeremiah because he was one of the few prophets who was saying it. Like one of his, again, some of the context, there's a series of these laments that Jeremiah has where he basically just complains to the Lord and just kind of goes like, really not happy with the job you've given me.
This sucks.
Yeah, pretty much. And some of God's reactions are kind of in line with the don't care, didn't ask. kind of, you know, so, you know, the first one, Jeremiah's, some people in his small town wanted to kill him and he didn't know about it. And they kind of, the Lord revealed this plot and he was, comes to the Lord and says, like, what? Like, they're trying to kill me? Like, seriously? This is what you've called me to? And God's response is essentially, oh, you thought this is hard? Like, it's going to get worse. So don't know how to break that to you, you know? And basically says, you got to trust me in this one. And there's a number of these sorts of kind of interactions with God. And another of them is about the false prophets, where Jeremiah basically says, like, what's my message? Like, all the prophets. And he doesn't call them false prophets. He just says all the prophets, because I don't think even he knew. They're all talking about peace. And here I am with this message of destruction and violence and judgment. Like, what gives? And the Lord's response is quite instructive, because he's like, if those prophets had stood in my presence, then they would have turned my people back to me. Like, that's one of the marks of a true prophet. But you just think, so there's Jeremiah hearing the word of the Lord, and even for him, he's like, I don't know that this is the word of the Lord.
Yeah.
Because I'm hearing other people declare that they also have the word of the Lord, and they're in the majority, and they're talking about all the good stuff.
Yeah.
And I've just got this, like, am I just a depressive personality? Am I a pessimist?
Just a bit of a buzzkill. Like, no one wants to invite me to the party.
More or less. So I think that there's, we are kind of straying away from the topic at hand, but I think there's some, that's one of the reasons why the book of Jeremiah is one of my favorites, because his faithfulness in the face of those really difficult experiences. Like, people often say, how do I know it's the will of the Lord? How do I know what God's calling me to? Well, Jeremiah, a prophet, was like, how do I know this is the word of the Lord?
Yeah.
And you're like, if you don't know,
then, like, we're stuffed.
Yeah, we're in a whole heap of strife. And you just think, what's the role in that, you know? And Jeremiah wasn't given any prophetic. He wasn't given any miraculous signs. So it's not like he was a wonder worker. So he was just left with the word of the Lord. And we don't know how that came to him. Was it a prompting? Was it a...
just an inkling.
Yeah, so there's some fascinating stuff and all that. But anyway.
Boom. Well, I think that's a good transition into question two.
Or it's a good spot to stop and just get to question two. I'm not sure it's a transition.
This guy just keeps talking.
I just feel really bad for Jeremiah. He didn't think he was equipped for the job. He didn't have the skills. And obviously it was a really hard job. It was saying in question one that he was just going completely against what everyone else was saying, and his opinion was probably incredibly unpopular. For us now in ministry and in this mission to kind of bring the good news and all that kind of stuff, I'm sure we have very legitimate concerns about our personality and our skill set. So how do we remain faithful in the midst of our legitimate concerns?
That's a good question. Because I think there is a real balance to be held in that, right? Because, I think we would all affirm that it's not about me, it's about God, right? And that's easy enough to say. It's a lot harder to actually do, because it does seem, when we're doing our ministry or we're preparing our sermons or whatever it is that we're called to, it seems to be all about us and not so much about God.
And right? You're saying that's a bad thing. Well, I'm just saying, up in your tone.
Well, just our experience is here I am left with all of my weaknesses and inadequacies. And I don't feel the presence of God guiding my pen or, leading me to type that phrase or. So how does this actually work? And so I think the question of remaining faithful while still relying on the provision of God is a really important one. Like, while I phrased it up as, God's response, being don't care, didn't ask, which I still think is a fairly accurate paraphrase.
Yeah, it's not backing down.
God's basically like, don't say that you're too young. So, like, just don't. And then hear my words, you must go and all, whatnot. But God's care for Jeremiah is revealed in his provision of his words. Like, so it's not as if God doesn't care about Jeremiah. It's that God doesn't care about Jeremiah's weaknesses.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a fairly important thing, I think, for us to kind of get our heads around as well. And I think some of it has to do with, in terms of being faithful, I think some of it has to do with recognizing not just the significance of our weaknesses, but the insignificance of our strengths. So I remember, this is years ago now. I can't remember.
I feel like this is another beat down.
You're going to bring us down another notch.
I'm not ready for this. Someone just hold me.
I'm ready for it to play out. And ultimately at the end, I think he's going to make us stronger. Right. But I just don't think it's getting there.
Strap in.
Okay, so this is a number of years ago.
Yeah.
And we were still in the old auditorium, if you're familiar with our buildings. And at that time, there was the preschool rooms were just kind of right across. And I think it was either before the first service or between services. And I just had a little bit of time to myself. And I was just kind of staring. And I was kind of praying, but I was just kind of staring across, and there's some of our, kids leaders playing with the preschool kids. And my prayer was something along the lines of, Lord, thank you for the opportunity to speak your word today, and just pray that you'd use the gifts and abilities you've given me. And it was that kind of prayer. And I had one of those moments where I really felt that God spoke to me. And one of the indicators that that's for me, that it's God, is that it happened in a flash, but it takes a lot longer to explain it. Mm. It's one of those, it all kind of was this immediate instant download of this.
Yeah.
It was as if God said, if I had wandered across the hallway into the preschool room, I could have defeated any of those preschool children in a wrestling match with one hand behind my back. Like I could have defeated all of them, right?
All right, I'm interested to see where this is going.
Not safe church compliance.
And so I did. I went and bashed up all the little kiddies.
The wrath of God.
Stick with me.
Okay.
We're back in the room.
All right. And so in comparison to a grown man, those 3 and 4-year-olds couldn't compete. And it was almost as if God then said to me, do you really think that your strength and gifts and abilities makes that big a difference to what he is able to do?
So we're the 3 and 4-year-olds.
Kind of. Mm. So here I am, a little 4-year-old, saying to God, let me help. I can do it. And God's like, okay.
So all right, build us back up.
Well, the image was essentially of kind of going, okay, like let's say, Jess, you think about, the opportunity to preach. Mm-hmm. Twice now, yeah. Postponed because
the Lord has knocked me back.
Yeah, because you caused pandemic. COVID.
Yeah.
So, but like right now, on a scale of 1 to 100, mm-hmm. 100 being like no problems at all preaching, 0 being absolutely no idea. Where would you place your skills?
Probably about a 15.
Okay, so 15. All right, and we kind of go on a scale of 1 to 100. 15. That's 15%. That's not great.
It's a fail if it was an assignment.
All right, maybe I get a credit.
That was a big jump.
I know. I just gave yourself a little asterisk on the HSC.
So 15. Mm-hmm. Now let's say that you continue to learn and grow and develop, and eventually you get to say 95.
Ooh.
Right?
HD.
In several years, you find yourself
converting for thousands.
Yeah, and you feel like you're like about a 95, and we kind of go, that's good. 95 out of 100. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. God's scale is not 1 to 100, but 1 to, I don't know, for the sake of argument, 10 billion. Which means that the difference between my weakness and my strength is statistically insignificant to God. Whether I bring all of my strength or all of my weakness, it's
still pathetic.
It still doesn't.
Still the 4-year-old.
Yeah, like God, like, do you follow me on that one?
Yeah.
And I think from our perspective, we see this massive gulf between our strengths and our weaknesses, and we're like, Lord, like, there's like a 70-point difference between my weaknesses and my strengths. Like, that's just impossible. Like, it's way too much. You can't possibly use me. And God's like, I can't possibly use you anyways, in the sense of like even the strongest, most competent, capable human being compared to God's strength. It's not as if God's going, I really need you, Jessica Baker, to be at a 95 or like my whole plan collapses. Mm-hmm. He doesn't. And so I think there's some freedom in kind of realizing that the gap between my strengths and my weaknesses is not as large to God as it is to me, which means that in my strength or my weakness, I can lean into what God has for me. Because ultimately, in my strength or in my weakness, I still have to participate with God's doing. It's not like we're going to have the training wheels taken off and God's like, oh, now you're a 95. You don't need me anymore. No, we're going to always need God. And I think that that's a helpful reminder then to kind of moderate our faithfulness. So our faithfulness isn't just be faithful until you're strong enough always be faithful.
Yeah.
Always be faithful. Always be faithful. That's where it starts and ends. Mm. Now, part of our faithfulness, I believe, is about, you know, developing our skills and practicing and getting feedback and growing in our capacity and learning and all of those sorts of things. But our faithfulness never stops being important. I think sometimes we can assume that I have to be faithful until I'm good enough and then I'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's just not the case. It's just not the case. And so that instantaneous kind of moment with God years ago has been really kind of quite impactful for me to basically kind of go, even in my strongest strength, God's not reliant on me.
Like, yeah. It's a humbling fact.
Yeah, I feel like we got there in the end. Like, I'm feeling encouraged.
But even so, incredibly not.
Well, I mean, it's the don't care, didn't ask again, isn't it? Like, there's an encouragement in that, but it's harsh.
Yeah. But it does mean that when we... It means that one of the first skills and one of the first attitudes that we can cultivate that will always pay off for us is faithfulness, of seeking to, you know, ask the Lord, what do you want me to do? And then doing the best that we can to do it, relying on His strength, His power, His words, His protection, all those sorts of things.
Yeah, right on. All right. Well, and also insightful that Mark's never done kids ministry. And now we understand why.
Although,
the urge to smash them all down is strong.
I don't know if you've met my 5-year-old, but he could take you.
Yeah, and when he said, like, you could take every single one of them, I was like, I think parents would disagree.
Yeah, there's a swarm effect with little kids.
They managed to get
onto the hive. Protecting the queen, which is candy. Like, they'll come at you. They'll go for the shins. They play dirty.
Terrifying.
Yeah, and while I just deal with my PTSD over here, I think it's time to move into question 3. Well, Rita, one of the questions that came up on Slido kind of came from a different perspective, but when I read it, I was like, oh, actually, I think that this is a really good conversation for us to have, because much of this of your message was around, okay, what's God's call in my life? What are my weaknesses? What barriers do I need to push through and remain faithful in? And there's very much an individual invitation in this kind of message. But our third and final question kind of speaks to, okay, so then what does that mean for us as a corporate body? And more importantly, how do we facilitate this faithfulness of working towards the plans of God, even in our weakness? So third question of the big three today, what can we do as a community to foster an environment that affirms and releases people into God's call?
I think, again, there are probably a few things that communities can do. I think one of them is to celebrate faithfulness. I think one of the things that I've learned in ministry is that often, like, skills can be taught, but faithfulness, that kind of character, that kind of component, often I think it can be learned. But there's something about having a faithful person rather than a skillful person. Like, if I had the choice, and yet there was someone who was just faithful, always there, did what they said they could do, but didn't have the same level of skill as someone who was less reliable but had a higher level of skill, I'd take the faithful person 10 times out of 10. Like, it wouldn't even be close. Because it's often the faithfulness and consistency that's far more critical in ministry than skillfulness per se. And, you know, some of the skills that we require, you can learn them, you can grow in them, you can develop them. And so you give me a faithful person. But I think often in our communities, we can end up, I think sometimes subtly, but sometimes, unfortunately, I think consciously, celebrating giftedness, celebrating capacity, celebrating ability over and against faithfulness. And that sets us up for an unhelpful community environment for trying things. Because then it's like, well, unless I can do a youth talk like Jess, unless I can lead a life group like Matt, like, I'm out. Like, I can't do that. And so I think that we have to be very careful about what we celebrate You know, yeah. And so we do want to be able to say, hey, Jess, that was a great talk and, you know, love the illustrations and the man, the kids were right in on it and, you know, like talking to them afterwards, you know, really big impact on their life. Matt, love how you lead the life group. It just keeps growing. People feel connected. Like we want to celebrate those yeah. things and help people in their skillfulness. But at the same time, we need to be aware that as a community, we want to be celebrating faithfulness. Mm. And so how do we do that, you know, without downplaying Jess's skillfulness in speaking or Matt's skillfulness as a life group leader, how do we then also talk about, you know, just want to celebrate today the fact that, you know, Jess has finished, you know, 5 years as a youth leader and has kind of done that. That's just a huge milestone for us. The investment into kids' lives week after week after week has been incredible. She's a great speaker. We love that part about her. But, man, just her being here, the impact she's had, you know. But it's that kind
she's
of piece.
Tearing up over here.
You know, and similarly with life groups, you know, so that whole, yeah. we just want to affirm, you know, the fact that Matt and Sam have opened their home for, you know, a couple of years now to a young adult life group, whatever the case might be, where we're talking about faithfulness. And we still might then say, you know, love how you build community and how you care and whatever the case might be. But talking about faithfulness, I think that stuff's really valuable because then it allows us to kind of call out faithfulness where there isn't a high degree of skill,
yeah.
right? Where we kind of say, you know, it's the young Jess who's never done a youth talk but has been here for the year and she's just been here week in, week out, investing in the kids' lives. It's been amazing. Did her first talk on Friday night. That was great.
And she spoke.
Words came out of her mouth.
That's right.
They were heard by others.
So we might have to work on the language that we used. But it's that
she
kind of piece.
She stood on the platform.
But, it, you know, that kind of thing allows us to then celebrate the faithfulness
Matt's
of people.
Matt's laughing so hard because it's true. That's exactly what my first youth talk was like.
No.
He's still got the notes written down from his review.
Every days.
Okay, I didn't mean to trigger anything in that. I thought it was
you
safe.
You had a second and then a third and then a fourth. Thank you very much.
But I think that would be really helpful. And I think also then we probably need to learn how to celebrate having a go. I remember when I was still doing youth ministry in Canada, there was a conference that we would take a bunch of our like our youth leaders to, like the youth kids who were leaders in the youth group. It was an evangelism seminar. It was a week long. A number of years we drove down to Chicago. Like it was kind of big trip, a lot of fun. But part of what they would do is they would teach them apologetics and basic gospel presentations in the morning. Then they'd send them out in pairs basically in the city to just try to strike up conversations with people about faith.
Terrifying.
Yes.
Yeah.
My palms are sweaty.
And then in the evening, there'd always be kind of this big worship gathering and, you know, an inspirational kind of message. But they'd also do kind of a bit of a, like, what happened on the streets today?
Did anyone get bashed?
And, you know, I think one of the most powerful things that I ever saw them do was not just kind of hearing the two or three stories of people who had like a really great conversation with someone and, you know, connected them to a local church or whatever. You're like, wow, that's amazing. Like who would have thought that a random conversation would lead to some kind of expression of faith or whatever the case might be. But also then to ask people who didn't manage to have a conversation with anybody today, like who just got shot down every single time. And inevitably there'd be more of those stories than of the people coming to faith on the streets. And there was something really powerful about just kind of pausing and saying, you did the right thing. You were faithful. You just went out. You spoke the word, or you tried to. There was no opportunity. You did, like, but that's worth celebrating. So again, it wasn't just the success. It was also the whole, who had to go and it just failed miserably. That would be me. You know, like, okay, well, you were faithful.
Yeah.
Good. Good work. And so finding a way to celebrate or acknowledge failure in the right direction. That makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, seeking to be faithful, not doing a great job of it, and kind of going, you know what, that's okay, you were faithful. So I think those would be really helpful things for our community of faith.
Yeah.
Which would frame up an openness, I think, to having a go at things.
Yeah.
But and also recognizing the faithfulness.
And it kind of fosters that vulnerability to kind of have a crack and fail.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas, you know, sometimes we get scared by the capacity of others and it pushes us back into, well, I'm not Mark Reeder. And so I can't preach like Mark Reeder, so I'm never going to do it.
Yeah, that went through my head at least 1,000 times.
As has it to all of us.
Yeah, which is outrageous because we all have different skills and we're all just here giving it a go.
And the world's already got one Mark Reeder.
Yeah, we don't need
another. And the better for it. And the better for it. But we don't need to. We don't need to.
Well, you could hear the difference between someone employed and someone who volunteers in that response.
Why? Because I'm being very political.
Oh, we're better for it. And Jess is like, oh, we don't need another one. So you be the judge. Yes. No, but I think you're right. Like, I think we can often compare ourselves to other people and we often compare ourselves on the basis of skill.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose there's a natural element of that, you know, like, you know, I think it's reasonable when you start preaching to think, okay, well, what are my models? You know, like that was part of, well, it's part of everyone's journey. It was part of my journey. It's like, okay, well, this is how I'm going to do it. I have no idea how this is going to work. And so you start that process and there is that comparison, right? You're like, okay, I really like what they did and I didn't do that as well, or I don't know how they do that, or whatever the case might be. And while there's a natural element of that, I think we do want to try to help people see that there are other components to be compared to, or to help people keep that as a useful comparison, right? Because it's not so much about the comparison. That's not particularly helpful. Yeah, because again, you know, it's not just that I'm a different person. Like, I've got 25 years of experience. Like, all of that shapes the comparison. But to be able to say, to listen to someone and say, oh, I really like what they did in this space, or to watch someone and learn from them, and then you try. It's like, oh, it didn't work very well, but I'm trying. I think those sorts of things are really valuable. So I think we want to help people trying to figure out how to learn from others without comparing themselves unfavorably to others. You know, and I think, you know, there's the all that stuff about diversity and unity and you know, all those sorts of things so that you hinted at. So
awesome. Well, thanks so much, Mark. Thanks for sharing with us your foundational text and then your insights afterwards.
Yeah, no, I was glad I was able to be part of the series. Yeah, you know, in that sense. So thanks so much.
As were we.
See you guys.
All right, Jessica Baker.
Matthew Willis.
We've had a big three. We've talked about it. We've discussed it at length.
Yep.
What's standing out for you now?
I really loved that discussion at the end about not necessarily your skills. I saw where he was going with the 3- and 4-year-old analogy.
You saw it?
I saw it. I do want
to... I looked away.
Part of me wants to run headlong into a giant whale just to get away from what God
is. I thought about Jonah in this whole situation as well. I was like,
I think he had the right idea.
Well, he did his own different type of lockdown.
He's
really.
Like, I hear what you're saying, Lord. Off I pop into the ocean for a quick dip.
See you in 2 weeks.
No, I liked it. I think it is humbling, but also, of course, we are just nothing to God, but he chooses to use us anyway.
Yeah.
And we just got to show up.
Yeah.
And I think what he touched on briefly of, like, we actually, you know, we sit down to write a sermon or whatever it is. We go to Sunday school and are like, Jesus, take the wheel. Whether we actually feel Jesus take the wheel or not, we've still just got to give it a crack.
Yeah.
And kind of try and do what we think the next faithful step is in that space.
Yeah, yeah. No, I loved that. It's a freeing and encouraging reality that there's, to God, there's not a huge difference between our weaknesses and our strengths. Yeah. But, you know, it is a bit of a kick in the teeth as well. I'm not going to lie. I thought I did all right with that.
Especially if I'm like, preaching is my number one strength. It's all I am in this world. Well, you suck.
You're okay. Everyone just calm down. But I really loved that conversation around what the invitation is for us as a community of faith. I think that whole, you know, perfectionism and kind of polishedness of church can be intimidating for a lot of people. I know it's been intimidating to me before, but yeah, that celebration of faithfulness, I think is a beautiful thing that we as a community can be doing in, not just in what we do on a Sunday, but how we talk with those that we're doing life with and doing ministry with, I think that there's real growth in that. And if we became a community that really celebrated faithfulness, I think we'd find a lot more people feeling encouraged to step into faithfully what God is calling them into.
For sure.
And that's really exciting. So I'm keen for that. Plus, I don't want you to critique things that I thought were a strength. So just tell me that I'm faithful and we'll move on. That'd
Done.
Be great.
Done.
Well, Jessica Baker, enjoy the rest of lockdown because it seems to be such a highlight for you.
I'll see you in a week for my hour of socialization.
Human interaction. I'll catch you then. Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure you're there at one of our online services this Sunday and that you snap the Slido QR code before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big Three podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.